We had a terrific day yesterday as a team of persons from this congregation and Welch Terrace gathered together to get our shared community garden ready for the season. You, in fact, can give us a hand right after worship today as we head down the hill to bless the newly planted garden and to join our friends from Welch Terrace in a memorial weekend picnic. But when you do that, I must tell you, you missed all the fun yesterday. It started with Kathy, who is the lead gardener from Welch Terrace. She laid out a new plan for the garden, an expanded garden designed by ESF students for us. Kathy gave the small group at the beginning of the morning our marching orders, and then she headed off to the regional market to buy the plants, leaving us to do the work. Well, we agreed to it. The new plan calls for a combination of raised beds and in-ground planting, but it did not take long for those who had set upon the task of building the lumber upright for the raised beds to realize how old and fragile that lumber was. And so this year, why don't we just forget about the raised beds and do the in-ground planting? Having scrapped part one of Kathy's plan, the next person on the scene quickly set to work on doing away with part two of Kathy's plan. Part two involved removing the sod from several new planting areas, which made sense until the newcomer pointed out that when you take the sod away, there goes all of the topsoil with it. So part two of the plan went out the window as fast as part one. Though there remained a bit of a compromise in the sense that the decision was made to at least invert the sod, chop it up, flip it over, bury it back down to provide a foundation for all the soil that was to follow. That's when Kathy returned and wanted to know what the heck was going on. Was no one here in charge? Had no one listened to her instructions? Was everybody doing their own thing? And I thought to myself, this is what Paul experienced when he visited Athens and found every street corner filled with people debating which idea of God was the right one or the proper one. One person's idea seemingly was as good as the next. It was a hotbed, fertile ground for discussion and debate about the nature of God, with a special openness to new and novel ideas. So Paul waded in with both barrels blazing, as it were, or as the ardent prosecutor he once had been, accustomed to making and winning his case. Paul loved the rough and tumble in the exchange of ideas, seizing every opportunity he could find to tell others about his newfound faith in Jesus. And truthfully, without Paul's passion and skill for talking about the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus, the development of Christianity as a serious religious movement might have gone nowhere. Paul was not Jesus, but Paul was the one who spread the stories of Jesus everywhere he went, often at considerable personal cost. It's often hard, isn't it, to put ourselves in someone else's shoes, but it may well be that the world that Paul inhabited is on a par with our world today. A world in which Christianity is no longer the prevailing and dominant religious view and mindset, but simply one option among many. Many of us grew up in the church and in a world where Christianity was the established and accepted backbone of everything we knew, so established and so commonplace that in fact we simply took it for granted. Our talking points were not about what it meant to be Christian, but which version of Christianity we preferred. Protestant, Catholic, Orthodox, mainline, outlier. But today, as Christians, we are all outliers. Adrift in a world where Christianity is simply one option among many, and so Brother Paul may have something to teach us after all about how to tell our story, our version of truth, our vision of God. In a world that's much more religiously diverse, multifaceted, and pluralistic than we ever knew or could think. This past Friday afternoon, I sat around a table in the fellowship hall downstairs with members of the leadership training group that has grown out of our Friday pantry and community. One of the persons around the table had been raised Catholic. One was a Syrian Christian married to a Hindu. One came from a small conservative, maybe even fundamentalist black church. One had been raised in the holiness tradition. One came from white bread American stock, but had learned to appreciate and cherish the culture, traditions, worldviews, and religious beliefs and practices of refugees from around the world. Together, this odd group of folks debated whether Jesus and Christianity are meant to be inclusive or exclusive, and quickly found themselves, for all of their external differences, agreeing on these two core truths. First, that Jesus belongs to and is for everyone. And second, that the best way of showing that is through our actions, not just our words. In other words, there is something about Jesus that invites us and compels us to live our lives in a way that fully bears witness to the infinite, unconditional, boundless love of God revealed in Jesus of Nazareth. Paul painted a picture for the religious enthusiasts of Athens of a God who does not reside in idols or artifacts and statues of gold and silver or stone, but is a living God who created the world and all who are in it. A God whose nature and ways and power and glory are most fully and wondrously revealed in the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus. This living God is not a stranger to us, for indeed we live, move, and exist in that God. We are all children of God, and God is close to every one of us. That's the word picture that Paul created, and my expert team of theologians Friday afternoon will argue that that is our task today. To use our lives, not just our words, but our actions, to paint a picture of that living, loving, forgiving God for all to see and know and embrace. Can Christianity ring true today? Is there a way not just to appreciate the religious traditions and beliefs of others, but to celebrate and proclaim the truth that we know, the good news, the evangel of Jesus? Is there a way to show and tell others about Jesus, about the Jesus way, about why we love Jesus? Our lives will tell the story. Our lives will tell the story. If you choose to leave church this morning and not go straight home, but wander down the hill in that direction on University Avenue to bless the Near East Side Community Garden, here is what you will not see. A group of persons locked in debate over whose way of planning and planting the garden is going to prevail. What you will see, along with some aging and creaky backs and knees from yesterday, is a newly expanded and planted garden with room for still more to be added, because people put aside their differences to work together in the name of all that is holy and good, in the spirit and unity of Christ, to feed the hungry and to make this neighborhood a better place for all to live in. For the Apostle Paul, the goal was not to browbeat those who held different views. That might have been the goal of the old Paul before he met Jesus, but Paul's goal now was the same as Jesus' goal, for all to live life fully, freely, joyfully, abundantly. Should we do any less? Can we do any less? When the ancient Celtic Christians experienced that kind of life, they wanted to pass it on to others, not just keep it for themselves. Some of them would go so far as to climb into a simple boat like the one portrayed on the back of the bulletin, committed to letting the wind and the waves carry them to wherever God wanted them to go, loaded down not with earthly possessions or weapons for protection, but simply with the love of God and the faith and stories of Jesus. They were early practitioners of what is sung about in another of my favorite songs, "Lord, You Have Come to the Lakeshore," looking neither for wealthy nor wise ones. You only asked me to follow humbly. You know so well my possessions, my boat carries no gold and no weapons. You will find there my nets and labor. O Lord, with your eyes you have searched me, and while smiling have spoken my name. Now my boat's left on the shoreline behind me. By your side I will seek other seas. You need my hands, full of caring, through my labors to give others rest and constant love that keeps on loving. You who have fished other oceans, ever longed for by souls who are waiting, my loving friend, as thus you call me. O Lord, with your eyes you have searched me, and while smiling have spoken my name. Now my boat's left on the shoreline behind me. By your side, I will seek other seas. Wherever it is that the winds and the waves and the Spirit of God carry us in the weeks and months to come, should we do any less? Can we do any less? Can we make this song our own? Amen.